today, 'cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to the podcast to be named later, a.k.a. the Doc of the Rays alumni group, as Jason Hanselman and I are the only two guys on the show. But before we get started on the show, since we are recording this on Memorial Day, we'd like to leave a few moments of silence in for the troops celebrating Memorial Day. I know I have a lot of ex-Marines in my line of family, with deceased grandfather, my cousin who served in the first, and a couple of good friends from high school that served. So, Jason, you have anybody that you'd like to honor?
My buddy Keener should be coming home pretty soon. Looking forward to that. But everybody else that's still stuck out there, keep your head up. Hopefully we'll get you back soon.
Sounds good. All right, let's get back into talking with everything. It's been quite interesting time since the last podcast when we last talked together. We were in first place. Now we are in third place. So it's been a little bit of an issue. Jason, what are your reflections on the past 10 days or so?
Well, we were playing real hot for a while, and we caught some breaks where the Yankees and Red Sox weren't playing as well as they can. Unfortunately, the Red Sox now are absolutely on fire. Yankees are kind of playing about with us. They'll have great games where they look phenomenal, and then they'll have games where it's just missing. Luckily, that pitching is a travesty, and that's going to be their downfall. And I think that's going to keep us in it all year, because we can throw with anybody. And the little things that we do when we're not hitting keep us in every game. And to me, that's really exciting. I look forward to that race.
You know, it's interesting. Yesterday, I did my local radio show with the two guys that I do with ESPN 1080, and one of them is a Red Sox fan, and he was wearing a Wes Welker jersey yesterday. And I said, you know, it's kind of ironic you're wearing a football jersey and talking about the Red Sox, because they're scoring like a football team. You looked at, you know, we do that show every Sunday morning, and last Sunday morning, the Red Sox were in third place with a run differential of plus five on the season. You look at this week, looking at yesterday, they had a run differential of plus 34. So they had outscored their opponents by 29 runs over the past week. And that's kind of that same run. You know, the Rays had that run there for a while when they were on that road trip, and they were just scoring run after run after run. You know, look back at the Minnesota, the 15-3 game, those kind of thing. Every team seems to have those runs and whatnot. Boston's having it right now and doing it in a big way with, you know, Carl Crawford finally waking up and realizing that he's got to start earning some of that $142 million. Jacoby Ellsbury, last I looked, 6 home runs, 18 stolen bases, having a monster year. And Adrian Gonzalez has you know, jumped right into that ballpark and hit well. They still scare me. I mean, as you just said, with the Yankees and whatnot, their pitching's a problem. But you look at Boston, and they're still doing this, despite the fact John Lackey's out and Daisuke Matsuzaka. But given how they were pitching this year, it's not a bad thing those guys are on the DL right now, because they were actually costing them games.
Yeah, those guys, especially Daisuke, you really have to figure what he's got going forward. Lackey, maybe you can pin some things here and there and say, well, he's having family troubles. And honestly, I think that's just a ploy to keep the fans off his back. But the real surprise to me is Beckett. I know a lot of fantasy guys were real high on him this year. And still, you want to be skeptical, because he'll have a great year and then he'll have a bad year. And last year was pretty much garbage. This year he's looked a lot better, and he's tough. And between him and Lester and Buchholz, I think we've got a better top three. But the way they hit, that's still pretty nasty going into any series if you pick up all of them.
Yeah, I mean, with Beckett, the one of the things as a fantasy guy, you know, everybody would, when most fantasy guys look at a pitcher and say, oh, he's going to have a good year, pretty much what they do is they look at his ERA, look at his FIP, and compare the two. And with Beckett last year, you know, ERA of 5.78, FIP of 4.54, the FIP still stinks. But you've got a gap of, you know, 1.2 runs between an ERA and a FIP. That's going to kind of be a warning sign that, hey, he might have a good year. If you look back at 2008, he had an ERA of 4.03, a FIP of 3.24, came back in 2009 and won 17 games. But if you look back at 2006 with Boston, first year in Boston, ERA of 5, FIP of 5.1, then he comes out the next year with a 3.27. So it's really hit and miss with that strategy, but that's given that, you know, with the fantasy people I talk to, that's what a lot of people do, is they look at that column and say, oh, this guy had a big difference. Let's go ahead and say he's going to have a good year.
Yeah, and, you know, it's really – I mean, it's kind of interesting to me to see a guy that he's basically striking out exactly the same. He's walking exactly the same, but he went from allowing a home run every 14% of his fly balls to now he's down to 4%. Now that takes his FIP from 4.5 down to just shy of 3. And he's now he's underperforming or overperforming that in the ERA aspect is that sub 2. So people, I think this kind of almost feeds into the gambler's fallacy that a lot of people believe in, where you see a guy that's just having so much bad luck with things, and now you see a guy that's just running so hot and everything's going well. You do have to expect him to come back a little bit. He's not going to have a sub 2 ERA all year, but if he keeps that under 4 going forward, that's a pretty nasty rotation with those bats. And I think that's why you really got to look at the peripherals on stuff like this. FIP does a good job of just saying this is what's happened in these three aggregate categories. But when you really break it down to the components of strikeouts, walks, and home runs, it really tells an interesting tale for most guys, I think.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at – let's go back and look at his left-on-base percentage as a member of the Red Sox organization. 69, 75, 71, 72, 65, and now 86% this year.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, that's right there alone. You know that has to regress. A starting pitcher, if they have an amazing season, is around 80%. He's at 86 right now. So if he has the ERA 4 the rest of the way, you know, his overall numbers are still going to look good. But that bodes well for the Rays because they're not going to be facing a pitcher that is performing at a 2 ERA. That stuff's going to come down, especially this home run rate as a member of the Red Sox, 15%, 8%, 11, 13, 14, and now 4. But his other skills, as you said, strikeout rate is the exact same. Walk rate is the exact same. The only thing he's doing different, 4% less ground balls than last year. He's giving up more fly balls this year than anything. Those fly balls are staying in the park. You know, as it gets warmer in Boston, let's see how that holds up.
Yeah, get it out of your system, Beckett. We want to thrash you when we see you, buddy.
And that could be as soon as 2 weeks after the Rays end this homestand. They got the 3 games here against the Rangers, and then they go on that brutal road trip where they go from St. Pete to Seattle to Los Angeles to Baltimore over to Detroit for 1 game before coming home to host the Red Sox for the first time in 2011 and then bring the Marlins back, who they had a tough time against during the first round of interleague play.
Right, and I mean, as we were talking about before the show, it's – yeah, we're going on the road and we're facing some stiff competition, but look at who we're facing. Coming up, we've got Colby Lewis, C.J. Wilson, Derek Holland. That's two lefties that are real tough against us. And you're talking about they're coming to the Trop, where their numbers are going to look a lot better when they're in flyball Arlington. And then we go out to Seattle and we're facing Vargas and Pfister, who, okay, you can probably sell them short a little bit, but they pitch well in that park. And don't forget on Felix Hernandez, who's just a ground ball machine, who's going to chew us up and spit us out. And we're going to need a huge start from James Shields that game, who also could benefit from that park. And it could be a real great pitcher's duel right there.
Yeah, it's going to get – I mean, this is a brutal week, as we just said. You know, there's three left-handed pitchers in Wilson, Holland, and Vargas. There's a ground ball machine in Felix Hernandez. So there's four guys right there. And this year, the Rays have had their struggles against lefties and ground ball pitchers in particular. We've seen guys like Burgesson shut this team down. Anybody
yeah.
Lefty, you know, Phil Koch was doing very good until he got – so I don't know what it is. It's like a revert back to 2008 and 2009 when the Rays had their big troubles against left-handed pitching. You know, now it's ground ball pitchers as well, and it's very puzzling. Look at yesterday. They were able to get Justin Masterson for the second time this year and hit him well, and yet he's a ground ball pitcher. I guess it's just ground ball pitchers with more natural arm angles and whatnot. Plus, Orlando Cabrera doesn't really help you at second base when he's got fall down range at this point. But that's what it's been exposed to. So when I look at the schedule this week, it's a really big whammy of a good Texas team coming in with left-handed pitchers, then making the trip cross-country to have to face Vargas and Hernandez, two pitchers that really are very poor matchups for the Rays.
Yeah, and those that like offense, you're probably going to want to wait on that another week because, I mean, we're playing in Safeco, which suppresses offense, especially to right-handed batters. But then you're talking about we also go to what am I looking at here?
Anaheim.
Anaheim after that. But prior to that, I mean, we're still playing at the Trop where I'm seeing just a huge – pitcher favoritism there. You're talking the Rays on the road have a WAB of 331. That's good for fourth in Major League Baseball. At home, that's down to 303. So you're seeing almost a 30-point split there. And you're also seeing it from on the pitching side. Opponent batters, you're looking at a 319 WAB. on the road against our pitchers. That goes down to 287 at home. So both places, you're looking at about a 30-point split. So between that and Seattle, what that's going to do, we're going to see a lot of good pitching this week. But those that are frustrated by the offense, strap it on, because we got another week to look forward to of maybe some frustration. But I look at it as it helps our pitchers as well. And I'd rather I think we're better suited to win a 3-2 game than we are 7-5. So I think that's going to help us out a little bit.
Well, yeah, given the fact that the Rays have only scored 7 runs one time at home all season, and that was yesterday, or Sunday, Saturday, sometime this weekend against Cleveland, they said, 7 runs. It's the first time all season that they've done that at home. And, the other thing to speak to your pitching point, Jeremy Hellickson now has 18 straight scoreless innings at Tropicana Field, which is a record, franchise record. But, you see, they were essentially 2 complete game shutouts when you look at combined efforts between the clubs and whatnot. So, the pitch, it's really been painful at times to watch the home offense. And we've talked, a lot of us on the site, we've talked about how top-heavy this lineup is. And this weekend we saw an interesting change where Joe Maddon put Evan Longoria in leadoff. And small-term results worked out great, but what are your thoughts on that move?
Well, I mean, if you want to talk top-heavy, that's about as bad as it gets right there. There are some pros and cons here, though. You're looking at if you believe that you want your best OBP guy, well, between Longo, Damon Zobrist, Longo's going to win that argument. Mm-hmm. Just saw that RJ had a great piece looking at if your goal is to avoid grounding into double plays, Longo he's going to do that from time to time. Guy like Johnny Damon, not so much. Barely at all this year. I think he's sub 5% on that. So you're talking now, if you got Longo and Damon, that's 2 high OBP guys right off the bat. And then you can follow that up with some of the other guys that are a little more slug heavy without the OBP. I think that falls in place real nicely. I think it just speaks to Joe Maddon willing to try whatever, and whether it's getting a guy out of a funk or if it's him trying to maximize that OBP at the top of the order. It's nice to see the results a lot better than it is to not see them and have the questions of, well, why is that guy doing that? And so it's interesting, but I do hope it's short-term more than anything. And really, for that to succeed, we need another guy to step up and take that spot. Hopefully, Desmond Jennings is that guy. He's just phenomenal when it comes to working counts. He's over 4 pitches per at-bat. He takes his walks. He can hit with a little power, but once you get them wheels on, either walk or hit, I don't care. He's going to be toying with pitchers. And now we'll still have Damon there in that 2 spot. Get Longo back into 3 or 4, followed up by Joyce. I think this lineup looks a lot better when you have a legit leadoff hitter without having to play a guy maybe out of position a little bit.
Yeah, that's the crazy thing about this. With Longoria hitting leadoff, he becomes the 7th different Ray to hit leadoff this year already. The only 2 guys that haven't hit leadoff this year are actually the 2 guys with the highest on-base percentage in May, and that's Kochman and Joyce. So those are the only 2 guys that have yet to hit leadoff, which is, that speaks to how crazy it's been. But that's why you got to, thank your lucky stars that the Rays have Joe Maddon and not a guy like Jim Leland or Manny Acta. Yeah, the Indians are up there. But, I mean, this weekend, Shelly Duncan and Travis Buck hit cleanup this weekend. And then those 2 guys, are you kidding me with that? But those are the guys that hit cleanup. Jim Leland's infamous. If Miguel Cabrera was out of the lineup and they played Don Kelly, they put Don Kelly in the 3rd spot because that's where the first baseman hits. You like to see the creativity that Madden's done. And I agree with you. I'm not, long term, I'd hate to see Longoria hitting leadoff. Doug Glanville, I thought, made an awesome point on Twitter where he talked about batting leadoff is, it's tough on your legs because you're on base a little more. You got to do more running and whatnot.
Sure.
And Longoria even said that. Callis said it yesterday during the broadcast. Longoria said, hitting leadoff is great and all, but it's been a little tiresome on him. So it backed up exactly what Doug Glanville, a guy that hit leadoff a lot in his career, said. So that's kind of my fear with that is I don't want to see, take away from what he's doing in the field because his defense, since coming back, it's been night and day compared to what Sean Rodriguez and Felipe Lopez and crew were doing over there at 3rd base, where you could count 5 or 6 plays where balls got by them that Longo just makes sticking his glove out kind of thing. So encouraged to see where that's going and whatnot. Just more to watch during to see how this road trip, the offense is traditionally been very well on the road. But again, Seattle, not a good place for offense. Anaheim, until last year, the Rays have always lost there. It's never been a good situation when they've traveled all the way out there. Then they come all the way back to Baltimore, a place they enjoy. It's just, for me, it's the travel. You got to go cross country twice, and then you got to go to Detroit for a makeup game, and then come back home. That's why I see this critical stretch of June, from now until the June 20th, whenever that Marlins series wraps up. It's really a make or break time. The Rays really have to come out of this with a good record. If they come out of it struggling, and some of those games include Boston, that's some separation there.
Yeah, and I think it's a bad time. I hate to say it. I never thought I would, but. Horrible timing for Casey Kochman to hurt his ankle there. Now you're talking, what do we do about first base, especially if we're out west when all our farm teams are on the East Coast? Now you're talking about sending a guy out there who's going to be a little bit jet-lagged, who's already trying to make a debut maybe, and a guy like Russ Kanzler, who, by the way, has a 417 WABA at Durham right now. He's walking about 16% of the time, striking out about 20, and that he's doing all this with a 5% home run per ball in air. That's more in line with his career averages, but that's still low for most guys. Honestly, if you can't tell, I'm kind of banging that drum. I'd love to see him come up here pretty soon, see what he can do. Hope Casey's okay, because he's just tearing the cover off the ball against righties and holding his own against lefties and playing a pretty good first base. Consider this me eating a bit of crow. I've been kind of pretty anti-Kochman so far. But the lesser of two evils has really worked out so far, and I hope he's healthy and can come back and keep doing it. If not, I'd love to see Kanzler called up. If they're not going to go that route, maybe you see Matt Joyce over there a little bit, which means more playing time for Fold. Right now, I'd love to see Sean Rodriguez maybe get some time in the outfield if that's what it takes. He's got almost a 500 WABA against lefties. If that's going to be one of our big weaknesses going forward, and as a team, we've got about a 310 WABA against all lefties this year, get him some playing time. And if it helps him hit righties better playing every day, do that. We've got some options going forward. This injury isn't extremely critical. I just think it is bad timing with this West Coast swing coming up.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, Madden already said that he was going to play Felipe Lopez at first base, at least today, actually, because of the left-handed matchup, which assumes that he's going to also play it on Tuesday against C.J. Wilson, a guy that just shut down the Rays in the postseason last year. But that's really not a long-term solution. Lopez did nothing to inspire anybody his first time around here. We know he's up. Basically, he's up because Elliot Johnson got hurt. Otherwise, he would have probably gone right back once Reed Brignac came back up. But I agree. It's kind of painful. I really hate the Super 2 system and how it to me, it degrades the quality of baseball being played all over the place. You look at Toronto. Their third baseman going into yesterday were 0 for their last 42. And they've got a guy like Brett Lawrie down at AAA just destroying the ball everywhere. And originally they said, oh, it's because of his defense. He made like 6 errors in his first 12 games, but he hasn't made one since. And he's just absolutely killing the ball while they're playing stiffs like Jason Nix over at third base. They've played John McDonald at third base. They've given E5 a couple of days with a glove over there. That's what I hate about this whole Super 2 system is the teams that ball on a budget have to stretch out and put placeholders in place, guys that are essentially 3 or 4 A players, stick them in this position until this arbitrary date comes by, then they could then pull these guys up. And I'm hoping the Super 2 thing goes away with the next CBA and they just go 3 years for everybody, because just playing with this date so you stay out of the 17%, it's affecting two teams in this very tight AL East race right away. And it's because, you add up their two payrolls combined and it still doesn't equal what Boston and New York bring to the table.
Yeah, and Boston and New York, they don't even care about Super 2. Because if a guy gets too expensive, what's too expensive for them? $30 million? They don't care if Robinson Cano comes up and after 2 years they got to pay him extra to Arbier. And that's really kind of stacking the deck against teams like this. I'm with you. That really needs to be tweaked, if not gotten rid of completely. Even the fans at Durham, okay, you get to see these guys for an extra month or two, but then they get called up after a fantastic season leading the division all year, and then what? Then you get to look forward to a summer where you're watching guys that aren't as good as what you're accustomed to. Really, there's no winners in this, and including the players who are basically getting jobbed to so that they don't make as much money. The incentive is there to work harder, but to what point? Because they know they're going to be stuck down there anyway. To me, you really got to find a new way to do that. I don't really have any answers other than to be a fan and say just bring them up. But if you're a fan of the Rays, you got to realize this is how it gets done. And to me, I'll roll with it. I always, as always, trust those in charge because they know what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a different – this is where it differs from the previous organization. You know, with the Moldy and Lamar, they would have promoted these guys already. They always did. And you look back, Rocco came up early. Delman Young came up early. Carl Crawford came up early. Service time really wasn't an issue with those guys. They just wanted to get gates, and so they called these guys up. But, you know, Friedman and crew, they don't look at short-term results and say, oh, God, we got to have them up. But at the same time, I mean, you look at the month of May, Sam Fuld has the worst WABA in the entire league, and he's playing most of the at-bats in left field right now. I like Sam Fuld on the roster. I just don't like him playing every day when he's not producing. And you've got, you know, guys like Jennings, guys like Guyer down there who are producing that could make a difference, especially against left-handed pitching, something this team is overly exposed to. You know, they just can't – they've done nothing. And you've got two good right-handed bats, which would be upgrades to what's currently out there in the field. And we're just having to live through it until, you know, it looks like Guyer, if you go by the whole dates, Guyer will be up first and then Jennings will be up. As RJ's article, you know, 2.146. seems to be the magic number for this year, which puts him somewhere around July 4th.
Yeah, and on FUD, I mean, I love watching him play out there. He's a gritty gamer and all that stuff. But at the plate, I mean, he's just looking pretty lost right now. And I wonder if maybe there's a jet stream in the field because it looks like sometimes his cape gets caught up in that with some of these routes he's taken. I love seeing guys dive and all that, but it just seems so many plays where if BJ or maybe Jennings or even maybe Guyer were out there, the dive wouldn't even be necessary because they're going to take a better route and they're just as fast and they're going to get to the ball. So I love Fuld as a four, maybe fifth outfielder. Mm-hmm. And he's got a great skill set that you want on the bench. With he can pinch run. He's lefty, so if you want to work that matchup later. But I've had about enough of the Sam Fudd in left field experiment. I'm glad the Cape Day is over if that's why they've been playing him so much.
It's you know, I think it really became to a point, if you remember when he was playing center field when BJ was serving a suspension, if you were just to watch him play center field compared to how BJ plays it was night and day. I mean, BJ looks like a gazelle out there, and you know, Fuld looked like just running with his legs were running faster than his body, and you know, taking some looked like a wide receiver trying to catch a throw in a windstorm. It just was really not pretty to watch. I know he covers a lot of ground. I know he's made a lot of, you know, amazing catches and whatnot. And he had his run earlier was a key part to the Rays' success getting out of the doldrums. At the same point, again, you're looking at a month of May where overall he's been the worst producing player in baseball, and the more you play him, the more detriment you're doing to the team. I think if you set him up for success, defensive replacement, certain matchups against righties and lefties, you know, set him up for some better success, I think you'll have better success. But you know, if you take away that big stretch and fans were to look at his numbers, it's just not a pretty slash line to look at right now.
Yeah, and I mean, if we can kind of switch gears to another position that's really frustrating people, I imagine. I mean, look at catcher. What are we getting out of that massive black hole that is the Shop Jaso tandem? And it's another thing where you look down to Durham and you see a guy like Jose Lobaton with a 401 WABA, critical acclaim on his defense. So, I mean, and even you go down another level, Nevin Ashley, who wouldn't even be there if it wasn't for Lobaton hogging all the time at Durham, he's another guy that's just crushing the ball. He's got a 406 WABA in Montgomery, another guy, critically acclaimed defense that can take a pitcher under his wing or block balls or throw guys out. So you really, I mean, the ticking time bomb that is Shopik Jaso, you got to even wonder if both those guys are going to get traded at some point. I know the Giants probably are looking to do a little better than Eli Whiteside, and I'm not saying Shop carries a ton of value to them, but maybe you get him out of the AL East and over in the NL West where, I mean, there's just as many pitcher parks and just as many tough pitchers. But those guys got to go. I'm at the point where we need to see what Lobaton's got, maybe Ashley even. It's not like they could do any worse at this point.
All right. I mean, my only thing with Šopek is I think there he deserves some credit for the turnaround for James Shields this year.
Sure.
That's really his only saving grace, because you look at the black hole of catcher that for this team. In 187 plate appearances, we have 12 extra base hits, 18 RBI, 41 strikeouts, a slash line of 199, 262, 327. And most of that is Jaso. I mean, Šopek, 79 plate appearances, 141, 215, 225. He has two home runs out of his 10 hits and everything at eight singles. That's what he's got. Four walks, 28 strikeouts. His SOPS is 27. at least with Jaso, he's at 98, so he's almost at league average now. He's got a 240, 296, 400 slash line, eight walks, 13 Ks, and 108 plate appearances. So he's almost at league average. I mean, let's be honest, catching for the most part in the American League stinks this year, so he's almost at league average. But, I mean, Šopek, outside of what he's been able to do working with Shields, I don't see any other redeeming value in what he's done when you've got guys in the minor leagues that are producing better and, you know, defensively would be an upgrade, because this has been the running game has been a problem. The pitchers have been picking off more runners as one way to help control the running game. But at the same time, these guys defensively have not cut the mustard.
Sure. And I think, again, that speaks to our budget, where we have to look for guys that are specialized. Right now, Shop's definitely the better defensive guy, because Jaso, I don't know if there's a hole in his mitt or in his stance or what, but when he's back behind the plate, I worry every breaking ball is going to go back to the screen.
Agreed.
And Šopek, okay, he's a little better defensively, but you might as well give him a toothpick up there, because he's not hitting anything. Lefties, righties, middles, I don't care. We're a low-budget team. You got to get guys that are specialized and focus on a specific niche. But, man, if you could combine those two into one player, you're talking about somebody that could really help a team. Right now, the sum of the parts isn't equaling the whole as far as that goes.
Right. I mean, the fielding-wise, you know, somehow Jaso only has two pass balls in the year. It just seems like it's like 12. When I look at that, I see two. But you look at the running game, they are 13 of 46 in throwing out runners. So they've had 33 successes, 33 people have stolen base, 13 have been caught. And Šopek has caught 7 of the 13 guys that have run on him. Everybody's been pretty much treating Jaso as a turnstile and running on him. So you'd like to see, I made a tweet a couple of weeks ago, I wouldn't mind seeing a third catcher on this roster at some point. You know, Chirinos has got some offensive, he's played other positions in his career. But at this point, that's where I'm concerned about Šopek, is, you know, he offers some good defensive value. But as you said, it's a toothpick at the plate. If he runs into something, great. But most of the time, if you've got Šopek and Brignac in the 8 and 9, it's no wonder this team has had trouble in the bottom half of the lineup, because the production has not been there in any capacity.
Yeah, and I mean, it's actually a pretty good idea with Chirinos, because he's a guy maybe you can stick him on first, or maybe you stick Jaso over there. With three catchers, you got a little bit of an option, other than we can't play this guy at first, because what if our emergency catcher then isn't available and our first catcher gets hurt? So that might be an avenue. It seems like Chirinos is hitting the heck out of the ball right now. You can obviously wonder if that's sustainable or not. But if we can get, another guy that isn't terrible defensively and can hit a little bit, maybe you almost like in The Dark Knight, when the Joker throws in the broken off broom handle and lets three guys fight over one spot. Let's see who's going to be on the way out here and give them a real chance to play against each other and see who wants it.
Yeah, it's going to be, as we talk about the Super 2 and what happens, I mean, let's be honest, we talked about how heavy, top heavy this offensive lineup is, but let's be honest, it's mostly been the Matt Joyce show. If you look at the home runs this month, I'm looking at May, he has 6 home runs this month, BJ Upton has 4, nobody else has any more than that. You look at RBI, Joyce and Upton have 35 RBI combined. The next highest guy is actually Sam Fuld with 13. So he's got more RBI than Evan Longoria does this year. As hot as Casey Kochman's been in the month of May, hitting .373, .430 on base percentage. He scored 7 runs and has driven in 8. So it's one of these – it's a very top-heavy lineup, and Matt Joyce has been performing out of his mind. You're looking at, BABIP is still somewhere over around .420. You worry about sustainability. Yeah, he's doing a better job of hitting the ball to all fields and whatnot, making better contact, taking more walks at the plate, But this has got, as we talked about with Beckett earlier, this has got to come down. And as he comes down, somebody else is going to have to step up. Right now, that hasn't been Ben Zobrist. He's back into his rut again. He's coming the walk, the strikeout, or the occasional extra base hit. That's what he's into. Sean Rodriguez is showing signs of becoming that guy. But when your two best hitters are Joyce and Kochman, guys, everybody's worried about regressing. Somebody else has got to take a step up here in the coming weeks if this run of success is going to be a sustainable thing.
Yeah, and actually, way to mention it, I've got a pretty huge Joyce piece coming out, hopefully Tuesday, maybe Wednesday, looking at basically everything from the pitch FX angle. And the guy is just, when you look at how he's taking pitches, you talk a lot about patience and power and how that's ideal. He takes it to another level. You see the way he's able to lay off fringy pitches. And, I mean, I'm looking middle-middle. He swings at 95% of those pitches. Mm-hmm. He's got an 820 Wabacon, which is basically it's a way another version of almost like ISO where you're looking at power. And he's swinging at, let's see, 74% of the pitches in the zone he's swinging at. And on that, he's hitting 34% line drives.
Wow.
39% ground balls, only 22% fly balls. So you're talking he is going to have a bit of a higher expected BABIP. That's around 359 by my math. And he's actually putting up a 455. So, yeah, that is going to come down a little bit. But when you're hitting 34% line drives and you're putting 42% of your swings into play, the guy is just an animal right now. And as long as he can continue to keep off the pitches out of the zone and look, I mean, it's honestly, it's so amazing for me to watch because this is exactly what you preach at every level. Look for your pitch. When you get it, do something with it. And he's just absolutely tearing the ball, the cover off the ball right now with that approach. And I kind of hope it rubs off on other guys because as he comes down, we're going to need Upton to show a little more consistency with his contact. We're going to need Longo to, A, work the walk, stay off the pitches you can't hit, and when you get one, drive it. And those aren't the only guys. I mean, the whole lineup has guys that have shown they can hit, not just in favorable scenarios. So let's see that going forward because Joyce can't do it all by himself all year.
Yeah, and that was one of the encouraging things this weekend with Longoria, how he is going back up the middle because the at-bats I've watched, especially on Friday night when I was at the game, really pulling off the ball. I mean, this is a guy that was trying to crush it and really pulling off the ball, leaving himself exposed to stuff on the outside corner. And this was something that happened a lot last year when Pena was going through his struggles, is that they were just feeding him crap off the outside part of the plate and making him go the other way. But if he's getting pull happy and pulling off the ball, that's going to leave him exposed to a lot of pop-ups, a lot of the grounders that he was hitting. You saw the home run to dead center, the single up the middle, those kind of things. Hopefully those are good signs because you saw with Joyce when his little run started – yeah, last year I want to say something like 75% of his balls in play were to right center or right field. If you go look at his spray chart this year, it's all over the place. He's got just as many hits in the left field as he does right field. And for the most part, when he's hitting him where he's being pitched, I saw one at bat either Thursday or Friday where he took a high outside fastball and just was still able to put enough bat on the ball to hit it through the right side. I mean, traditionally that's been a pitch that he's been hitting the other way, but he saw that pitch. It was kind of tailing away from up high, and he was still able to get the bat head out in front of it and hit it with enough authority to get it through the right side of the infield. So, more of these guys, the way these guys are being pitched, you're going to see, especially with this lefties, when you got Vargas coming up there on Friday night, and you're going to see the same thing with Wilson. These guys love to work the outer edges. Wilson made a field day in the postseason of just pounding the Rays on the outer half of the plate, making them do something, and that's where Jason Vargas lives. He throws that cutter on your hands, and then he just pounds it away, a lot like Tom Glavine used to do in his heyday with the Braves. And it's going to be interesting to see how the team adjusts to that during this trip.
Yeah, that's funny. I was just going to make that Glavine comp myself. But the nice thing is, from Joyce, what I'm seeing, he's already been getting pounded away. It's almost like he doesn't even want the inside pitch because he's not swinging at it all that much. I guess he is enough, but he's getting just pounded away, and off the plate too, and he's getting a lot of called strikes in the wide zone, which is almost the extended off the plate that lefties have to deal with. That's just become a culture of the strike zone, mm-hmm. and he's having success with that. So are pitchers eventually going to adjust and give him something inside that he can really rip? I mean, have we even seen Can he do even better if pitchers try to adjust and come inside on him and really let him turn and burn on it? That'll be interesting. And honestly, this will be a real bellwether week. Is Joe going to keep him in there against the C.J. Wilson, Derek Hollins of the world, against Justin Vargas or Jason Vargas, who isn't a premier lefty by any stretch, but is left-handed, and by platoon rules, Joyce would be sitting. I think that could be a real good message going forward if we see him getting more of those plate appearances and if he can do anything with it. And yeah. And Roddy can keep going, and Longo can get going. I mean, maybe we can turn this ship around against lefties here.
Right. I don't know if Joe has much of a choice, to be honest with you. You know, he was enjoying some of that flexibility with Elliot Johnson, but Elliot Johnson's obviously on a disabled list, so that takes away one of his options there. You know, Justin Ruggiano is still on the 25-man roster, but you would never know it because a guy has made, I think, two appearances and hasn't done anything. Hasn't seen the field in late innings or in anything, even though there's been some lefties out there. So he's on the roster, but you know, he's not up yet. The only thing, you know, I know Slowinski emailed us this morning. Dirk Hayhurst actually tweeted us the D-Rays Bay account this morning and said, hey, I know something you don't. Maybe he missed the fact that we were covering. We know Alex Cobb's coming up the pitch tomorrow, or maybe one of these bats is going to come up and help the lineup in some capacity. But we'll see, because right now the 40-man roster is at a full 40-man. So you know, there's not an empty spot when they picked up Jay Puente from the Marlins, who actually had a good appearance last night, threw six innings of ball and took a tough 2-1 loss for the Durham Bulls last night in a doubleheader. But you know, if they were to make a move, you mentioned Russ Kansel earlier, somebody's going to have to go. And we still don't know who's going to go for Alex Cobb, whether it's going to be Brandon Gomes, who's the only guy in the bullpen right now that has options that could be sent down, or if it's going to be Andy Sonnenstein. We don't know who's that going to be. So if there's going to be the pitching, we know the pitching move's coming. If there's going to be a hitting move, we don't know, you know, what's going to happen there.
Who would you prefer? Maybe Jennings, Guyer, Chirinos, Kanzler, all these guys that are maybe just knocking on the door. I mean, what's your ideal scenario?
My ideal scenario is I'd like Jennings and I want him to hit leadoff. That's where I want. I mean, but let's be real. We don't think that's coming for a few weeks. I mean, if not, give me Guyer because he can play all three spots in the outfield. I know catching's been a problem, but I don't want to see Fold out there playing every day. And you know, if Bridniak's going to continue to struggle, I'd rather see Sean Rodriguez get most of the at bats at shortstop right now, which takes him out of the outfield rotation. So I need a right-handed bat. I'm not a Justin Ruggiano fan, and I know he's had some nice numbers in Triple A Durham. He's got, you know, leads them in career plate appearances. But, you know, Dan Johnson had those same kind of numbers too. And we saw with Dan Johnson, you know, he was given enough rope here and wasn't able to pull it off. And Justin Ruggiano's had his problems. You can watch it in a swing where he has problems. And with Guyer, the athleticism, the guys continue to hit. Kevin Goldstein was praising him again this week in his future shot column. All the guys done is hit. Wherever he's been, AA, AAA now, and the fact that he can play all three positions, I think, would be an added benefit to this roster.
Yeah, I don't even get it why he was sent down other than Super 2, or maybe they're trying to hide him a little bit. I mean, the guy comes up in his first at-bat, smokes a home run. I mean, granted, it's the Orioles, but he took it out, and it was a no-doubter. And so I don't know. I mean, It's frustrating at times, and I guess that's why I love this team so much, is because we do have to do things differently, and we are bound by all these extra constraints that other teams might not have to worry about as much, and yet we still go out and do it, and we find a way, and I mean, Joe keeps talking about finding another way, and they do, and it's just so imaginative, some of the things that they come up with. It's really a treat to watch this front office, management, everybody's on the same page. And the execution is there for the most part. I don't really have much more to add. This was a lot of fun, and I'm glad I could pour out some thoughts on that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the other thing, we've failed to mention it, this whole road trip, we said it was a critical time. But let's not forget, in a week or so, the draft's here. And we know that, you know, Andrew Friedman's already called June 6th, 7th, and 8th three of the most important days in franchise history, as the Rays have, you know, 12 picks between pick 24 and pick 89 in the draft. So, you know, as the Rays are doing this whole West Coast road trip, the draft, and I know everybody's got one eye on it. Most of us, you know, we leave that up to Gengler and Glass and all to cover, because they cover it, you know, closer than the rest of us. We just want to see who they're going to end up picking. But every day I look at another mock draft. I saw one this morning. morning from Sickles, who had the Rays taking a high school pitcher from Puerto Rico, and I forgot the other guy. But it's every day you see something new. Somebody else has a mock draft. Keith Law has one and whatnot. But I just want this draft to be over. I want to see who the Rays are going to get, and I want to see who they're able to sign. If I had my druthers, when I look at this organization and see the balance between hitting and pitching prospects, I'd like for 8 of those 12 picks to be bats. Because you look at the upper levels right now, we have the help in the outfield, but the infield is very suspect. You've got to wait. Tim Beckham is finally showing signs of being a prospect this year. Hak Ju Lee behind him, and that's shortstop. But let's look at third base. Let's look at the corners. That's a little bit of a problem. Second base, you don't see much. The catchers, obviously, we thought it was going to be a problem. Pretty much has been a problem for the entire history of this organization, save the 1 year by Navarro. But it looks like between Labaton and Chirinos, one of these guys may work out. But at the same time, if another good catcher comes along, they can take one in this draft and see what happens.
Well, you're right. And it kind of goes towards your designated hitter piece last week, where it would be a real nice luxury to have an all-bat, no-glove guy to stick at DH or first base. But really, and this goes all the way back to the beginning of the team, there really hasn't been too many sure-thing first-base prospects that have panned out. It seems like the Rays go after a lot of journeyman types that traditionally thrash AAA, and then when they get called up, they don't do a whole lot. Maybe Josh Sale is that guy. Maybe they get that guy in this draft. I'd really like to see that philosophy come in a little bit here, because we do go for toolsy, up-the-middle guys that might have questions of whether it's going to translate, but we love the athleticism and we'll work it out. The pitchers, we're going for high-upside guys, and we're traditionally getting that, but you don't see many picks for that corner power guy. And that would be real nice. And it looks like there's some options that hopefully fall to us with Kron out there. I know people that are just pants tenning it up trying to get this guy.
Yeah.
And to me, I mean, just the excitement of adding a bat like that. And I think that's why the draft is so fun. I mean, you can really get your kid in the candy store glassy eyes going, because all you see is the potential and the upside with none of the downside. And that's what makes it exciting for me this year. And we should have a ton of great coverage between Kevin and Randy Glass. And check out Bergie over at Race Prospects. He's been
definitely
killing it. So if you're a Race fan, it's a really exciting time, both on and off the field. You're seeing a ton of great coverage of it. So get yourself educated.
Definitely. I know that Randy was going to have a whole bunch of pieces this week. He sent us an email saying he was going to do a whole lot of draft coverage. So, check that out. And again, with Borgie over at Rays Prospects, between the two of them, that should give you enough ammo so when you sit down next week and try to follow the draft while it's happening as quickly as the MLB draft goes by, you can see what's happening. I mean, with the DH piece, as I mentioned there, you never see somebody draft, target a guy. Hey, we're going to take this guy as DH. And I know why. The Rays have gone cheap at the corner and stuff, because power costs. I mean, home runs cost money, and that's why we've had Travis Lee and Paul Sorrento and Steve Cox, those types of names, and that's why it's been like that. But you look now. I mean, Casey Cotchman was a nice find. He's worked out, but if this ankle, let's say this ankle was broken and he's done for 3 months, what do you do? Coming into the season, you had Dan Johnson, you had Casey Cotchman, two left-handed bats. If Cotchman his ankle is worse than expected, that's a problem. You saw with Dan Johnson, he's not been able to do much in his career, and you sent him down, so you'd have to bring him back off back onto the 40-man roster. Are they ready to do Russ Kanzler, who doesn't have that much experience with AA? Yeah, he's having a good year in AAA. Is he a long-term solution? Is he a short-term solution? Who knows? But go down deeper than that, and you just kind of have to worry, where is the depth? What's going to happen? And with that DH spot, I know this year they spent the money on Johnny Damon. He has spent the $5.5 million, but I would just love to see a team find a guy. We mentioned Clint Robinson in that article. Those guys like Brandon Allen, those guys that have that fielding problem, and say, screw it, we're just going to put him at DH. I don't care if he's 25 years old. And if we're paying him $500,000, I don't care what he does, that he can't field. If he can hit and hit as a two-win player, it's a huge win for the team.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we're all on the same page here. Just want to see some more offense. And, I mean, as I mentioned earlier, the Trop's a big part of that. On the road, we've got, the fourth highest WAVA in Major League Baseball. So you do have to keep that with a grain of salt, that as long as these parks are – as long as we're playing in the Trop – you're going to go through frustration, but guess what? It makes our pitchers look a heck of a lot better. As you mentioned, Hellickson, 18 scoreless innings. A lot of that probably comes down to the Trout. Him and Shields just seem like different guys when they're pitching at home. And maybe that's a routine thing, but maybe it's just the way the park plays up to their ability.
Yeah, well, the good news is the Rays have more road games than they do home games here until the All-Star break. So if they can get to the All-Star break and still be here, what are they, 1.5, 2 games off the pace, keep it right around there, then that's a huge accomplishment considering what people thought the team was going to be. And then maybe this is a year they make some kind of move at the deadline. If you look at this team, the way how wide open the American League is itself, last I checked, 9 teams were at 500 or above this year. But nobody is running away with it. Cleveland's running away with the AL Central, but we've seen them. They have their faults. They're doing most of their damage at home. They're now a 500 team on the road. After the loss, I'm sorry, a sub 500 team after the loss yesterday. But most of their damage has been on the road. They're the best offensive home team in the American League, but they were 10th best on the road. And you saw that this weekend. They ran into the buzzsaw of the 3 top pitchers in the Rays rotation and walked away with 7 runs in the entire series.
Well, and I think part of that speaks to just how good Travis Hafner and Grady Sizemore are when they're healthy and banging, because that's a completely different lineup without them. Sure, you still got Asdrubal doing well, and Brantley. I mean, talk about a surprise guy there. He's bringing a lot to the table. But when you lose that 370 WABA out of Hafner and Grady Sizemore, who between DL stints, the guy is an animal. He's up now. He's 0-for-12, I think, since he came back. So he's probably
they
not
rushed
100%.
Him back. They rushed him back. He looked awful in this series. I mean, he took the golden sombrero yesterday. He looks like he's swinging all upper body, and there's no legs into his swing right now.
Yeah, and it's an unfortunate thing. He's an exciting player, and as one of our rivals, possibly throughout the season, good, keep him down. But I think it really speaks to a lineup where theirs is really similar to ours. You have niche guys, and then you've got a couple thumpers that you really rely on. And if a guy like Longo goes down for a month and a guy like Zobrist goes into a little bit of a tailspin from here to there, you're really going to see that affect the team across the board. And it's real hard to make up for when your best players are hurt or ineffective.
Yeah, I mean, we saw that with Longo missing 26 games. The Rays were fortunate enough to come out of that with a better record than they had when he left. But, when you've got to replace one guy, that's one thing. But imagine if Longo and Joyce were out of the lineup at the same time with the injury. It would be tough. So it speaks to Cleveland's resiliency so far and what they've been able to do and winning those games at home. 6-game lead now over Detroit keeps them in the case. So it's going to be interesting to watch for the rest of the way. All right. With that, I know we've said we're going to go half an hour. We've gone 40 minutes. So got some rest of the work to do and got some family stuff. But thanks for coming on the show today. Everybody listening, please enjoy your Memorial Day, however you're doing it. And remember to take time to think about those who made all of this fun day possible as we do this. And we will be back on sometime during the road trip, depending on my busy travel schedule.
Hey, well, thanks for the opportunity, JC. Looking forward to doing it again. And everybody have a great Memorial Day.
All right, guys, take care.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. 'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land.